Another episode of Was It Worthy? I am your host, Toffer, and with me as always, my movie Yoda, Ethan McKinley. Hello, Ethan.
Hi, how are you?
Lovely. Why don't you tell the lovely folks what Was It Worth It is all about?
Okay, well, if you've listened to the show before, just bear with me while I plough through this shit one more time. I'm Ethan McKinley, and I'm the very agreeable and thankful that I'm back on again guest on Was It Worth It, where I walk Toffer through the annals of movies, film history, if you will, because he's not seen most of the large-scale franchise and or legendary or classic films in Hollywood history.
Oh, but we're changing that. We're changing episode by episode.
We're slowly changing it. Two episodes back, we did American Wealth in London, which he unbelievably had not seen. Last week, of course, because we've got the opening week of Alien Covenant, we had 1979's Alien.
Yeah.
And we found it was actually worth it. So
it falls.
This week we're moving along with the sequel, 1986, 7 years later.
Really that long?
Yeah. Yeah, well, there wasn't really meant to be a planned sequel to Alien, I don't think. The studio wanted one, but Ridley Scott was like, I don't know where I can go with this. I think also he'd kind of had his fingers burnt because in 1982 he worked on Blade Runner.
Yeah,
which was like a nightmare production for him and kind of everyone involved.
So was it a studio thing? Did the studio want to make
The studio wanted it because like Aliens is considered this like horror classic. They thought they could mine out a lot of like mileage out of this, which they've obviously tried to do. We've now got, I think, six films, including now Prometheus and Alien Covenant, which opened last week. We've got a very tired and done with Ridley Scott. A lot of other directors don't really want to go anywhere near this because Alien is considered such a classic.
Yes, I can attest to that now. I liked Alien a lot.
Yeah, so this show is like... the good thing I like about this show is we're seeing a modern perspective prism or someone looking at an old film, which I guess you could go, well, it's a shit film. It's like 30 years old or 32 years old nearly with Aliens. From 1986. But we're going to see if these films still hold up, all the things that all these nerds and these groups and cult people and people that dress up at Comic-Con.
Not to offend anyone, you fucking nerds.
Well, I think you see people at Comic-Cons, all these Trekkies and things, and they get tarred with a bad brush. And this, I guess, podcast that you've come up with is to find out if any of this stuff is actually good and is the love justified for those things?
Yeah.
So, we have a young set decorator and production designer called James Cameron, who was a truck driver and then started working for a guy called Roger Corman, who was famous for making very cheap and cheerful shitty horror and exploitation films throughout the 1960s with like The Pit and the Pendulum and a lot of stuff with Vincent Price. He launched Jack Nicholson's career.
Did he?
Yeah, Jack Nicholson started working with Roger Corman, and then, of course, he got Easy Rider and then became very much part of that counterculture movement.
That's a good film. Easy Rider's a really good film.
Well,
it's a bit weird.
But, oh, my God. But... We've got a reverse Was It Worth It coming up.
You ever seen Easy Rider?
I'm familiar with all the tropes and the pop culture and the Billy Bike and Dennis Hopper and all the speeches and things and Jack Nicholson sitting on the back. I think, was it Peter Fonda's or is it Dennis Hopper's bike with the American football helmet on?
Okay, yes.
Maybe we could flip the script on this, but you've got James Cameron, who did the map paintings for like things like Escape from New York. James Cameron slowly worked his way up the ranks of Roger Corman and started writing scripts. He directed, which was taken off him, and the directing job was finished by, I think, the Italian director or someone else, even though they say it was James Cameron that directed it. He directed a film called Piranha 2, The Spawning.
Oh, that sounds fantastic.
Which was the sequel to Piranha, which was Joe Dante, who went on to direct things like Gremlins and Inner Space and stuff. It was his first directorial feature, I believe, about Killer Piranhas, which again was like jumping on the Jaws bandwagon. James Cameron wrote the script for Piranha 2, The Flying Killers, where the piranhas grew big fins and they were able to fly and chase people and eat them on the beach as opposed to in the water. So, yeah, he's basically trying to sell a bunch of scripts. He's in France, I believe. He's got this heavy fever, and he comes up with this idea. He has this nightmare about being chased by this killer robot, which is essentially a metal skeleton with burning red eyes. That obviously became his idea for the Terminator. He sold
The Terminator.
1984. He came up with that and made the Terminator, and then he was like the hot young sci-fi director.
Hot shit.
So when he was like walking around studios looking for his next project, he heard the studio wanted to do a sequel to Alien, and he said, I've got an idea for that. And that was the genesis of the film Aliens. Now, everyone was dead set against this. Alien should be a one-off classic like Jaws, even though that like spawned three sequels.
Jaws 3D!
Which I think is actually all right, and 2's really good as well.
Oh, no.
But yeah, I mean, the whole world was against Cameron on this. I think this is probably what forged his kind of resolve to kind of just have these like big ideas and take on these giant projects with the odds against him.
Yeah.
As with The Abyss, which was, I guess, a critical and commercial failure, but I think probably is his best film. But then, of course, you've got Terminator 2, which set the bar even higher.
I like Terminator 2 a lot.
Titanic, which, like, I'm not that much of a fan of Titanic. I like the technical aspect of it, but I can't get into the film. Not because it's a bad film. It's an amazing film.
You fucking heartless bastard.
I know, right? Dude, at the end of that film, there was plenty of room on that raft.
Oh, just, fucking more than enough, mate. More than enough.
Having said that, technically, and because it's a three-hour film, it doesn't feel like a three-hour film, and Cameron, of course, is famous for that. He makes these very long films which don't seem like that, and they keep...
Yeah, because Aliens was fucking long.
Well, I mean, there's a director's cut. Did you see the one with the sentry guns in?
Yes.
You did, so you saw the director's cut. You saw the better version. That's good. That's a good start. So, yeah, 1986, Cameron writes this spec script, gets the job. He employs now legend, sadly not with us, Stan Winston, to kind of redesign the alien suits, which we'll come to later in the show.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, the alien queen throwing out Ridley's original idea, which we covered in last episode about Alien, where the you actually saw the director's cut, didn't you, without knowing it? But that was, had the egg morph scene with Captain Dallas, who's still partially alive, and Brett, who's actually dead, almost completely turned into alien eggs.
Gets explained a little bit more in this one, doesn't it?
Yeah, so that idea was thrown out because that wasn't in the original regular theatrical cut. Cameron had free reign to kind of like think, well, these things are probably more like ants or bugs, where they kind of take colonists and cocoon them and they become hosts for the facehugger that we like saw in the last film. So yeah, Cameron came to England to shoot this film. It was shot in Acton Power Station, which doubled for the atmosphere process from the colonists.
Axis Chemicals, motherfucker, from Batman 89.
Exactly, yeah, good pull.
Yeah, bitch.
Toffer's favourite film, of course, Batman 1989. That, you are absolutely right. That is the exact location of Axis Chemicals, with the grating that you can shoot lights through, and it looks very atmospheric and cool.
Yep.
Yeah, 3 years before 1989's Batman, Cameron shot this in Acton Power Station. He had practical effects. He took a lot of real-world-looking things and made them look credible, I think, in my humble opinion. It looked like a functional future that looked very credible.
Enjoyed the cars. I thought the cars were dead funny. Wheels were fucking massive.
The power loader, the kind of the APC, their version of the Space Marines tank. Shooting this film, Cameron had a terrible time. A lot of the crew had worked on the original Alien, and they didn't like this young Hollywood American cocky upstart coming in and besmirching the name of their beloved Ridley Scott, who was, of course, a national treasure.
So what was your first experience with Aliens?
Oh, God, so it's 1986, so even though I was too young to see it...
How old were you in 1986?
I was 11.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I think... I think weirdly I was the perfect age to see it, because I was like still young and impressionable. I was obsessed with like sci-fi and monster films.
Yeah.
This film just completely blew me away. It was Aliens with just so many more layers onto it. And I know people go back and forth with Aliens better because it's more of a haunted house film. But I think as James Cameron always does with all his sequels, Terminator 2 included, and I think what he's going to do with the Avatar film, say what you will, critics, but never count James Cameron out. I think... what he took with Aliens, he built on the mythos and he added something to it. Like I think that all good sequels do, you kind of give people what they had in the original film.
Yeah.
And then you add more layers of lore and characters and drama that work. It's obviously a very skilled thing to do. And I don't know many people that can actually do this, take an existing property and either improve it or add enough to it that it stands side by side, which many people consider to be as good as the first film. I mean,
Lethal Weapon 2,
not by James Cameron, but yeah, well, I was going to say like Terminator 2. Terminator 1's great. Terminator 2 is amazing. But, you know, whichever one you prefer, you could. Most people agree those two films are like in lockstep as good as each other, or people have a slight favourite.
Yeah,
but it's only by a very narrow margin, isn't it? And I think Aliens is the same. I prefer Aliens, but I just think the model work in it's great. The special effects are amazing. I think they did the Aliens like just as good as you saw it in the first Alien, with like those like weird kind of clear lips that roll back and the teeth that like bear out and like stuff like that, and all the model work, because all these things like driving around the colonist station, like the APC, apart from like the large prop, which we'll get to. It's all like model work, and I think for the most part it works really well. There's a bit of like bad blue screen here and there where the drop ship is against the clouds and stuff.
Yeah.
But I think all in all it kind of still holds up, and I think the thing that strikes me the most genius thing about it, it looks like a functional working universe like the first Alien film. It looks like this place is actually a place and these people are kind of real. I think all the characters are fantastic. Bill Paxton that was obviously in the Terminator film and was brilliant in James Cameron's
True Lies. He stands out in this. He jumps out the screen.
In a bad way there or a good way?
It's both, but so bad that it's still good.
Because he's like the Johnny Big Balls, isn't he? He's like telling everyone how cool he is and how tough he is. And then when the shit hits the fan,
he shits himself.
He's the first one to kind of falter and fold and like lose his shit. But I think he redeems himself later on. So yeah, what was the plot about, Toffer? You've seen Alien 1. Yeah. What do you think of Aliens? What's the plot to Aliens?
Right, okay. So it's set, how many years in the future? 60? It's not 60, it's 40.
57 years, because I think there's an issue with her her navigation on the shuttle, the Narcissus, she escaped from in the Nostromo. By the way, in the last episode, I said I didn't know what Nostromo meant.
Mm-hmm.
But I looked it up and then I forgot to mention it. So the Nostromo, the ship from the first film, Alien, is an Italian word. It means shipmate or bosun.
Okay.
And it's from the Italian phrase Nostro Uomo, meaning our man. So it's basically the shipmate or the man on the ship. So
is that assuming gender in 2017?
It is.
You can't do that.
Oh, really?
Not allowed to do that. Never assume gender.
Anyone that says gender is fluid and there are more than one gender, I implore anyone to have sex with a tranny without a condom and see if you can get her pregnant.
Put that on a t-shirt.
Then we'll talk. Then we can talk some science. If you can get a transgender, not a transgender, because that's someone who might have, I mean, an actual person, a drag queen. Yeah. Ejaculate into a drag queen and see if you can get her pregnant. Then
ejaculate
get
into a drag queen.
There we go.
That's beautiful.
I just remember we're a master debater spin-off show, so I need to lower the tone slightly. We just lost all the transgender listeners.
I don't think we've ever said ejaculate into a drag queen, but, you know, that's why you're here, mate.
Alien, ejaculate into a drag queen. That'd be better than Covenant.
Whoa. Constant digs. Yeah, so it's set...
57 years, yeah. 57 years. She floated off around the universe and she was only found by a kind of salvage team, basically. So she didn't have a safe, straight journey back to Earth. So then what happened?
So she goes back to Earth, starts having nightmares, and then Mad About You turns up.
The sleazy business company man, Paul Reiser.
But she has to go back to... Oh, what's the planet called?
The planet now, it wasn't called anything in Aliens.
It's just a number in
Aliens, sorry. It's called LV-426, which is the name designated to it by the company.
The company.
This is the evil company that had elements within it that sent the ship to investigate this signal to get this alien. So,
We never mentioned that in the first one, that Ash was sort of working for the company to sort of...
Covertly, yeah.
Covert, good word.
To actually bring back life form.
And the crew were expendable.
They have the famous line, all other priorities rescinded, crew expendable.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Ripley returns back to Earth. Essentially, she gets in trouble, doesn't she, for destroying the ship, because there's no proof that her story is even real.
Yeah, which I find, obviously, because the ship blew up and stuff like that, but like, there's got to be like some sort of...
Well, I don't know. I've always had the theory that they were that whatever Ash was transmitting back to the Earth while he was experimenting
on
Kane. There's
got to be some sort of evidence there, isn't there, really?
I think people in the higher echelons of the company would have known about this, and I think that's where we come to in this film. And I think James Cameron's idea was they set up this colony on there specifically for this purpose at some point, to sacrifice all these people to get like a bunch of these creatures in a kind of manageable kind of environment.
To weaponize them.
Yeah, so they've been terraforming this planet for, well, because he said they've been people there for like, was it 10 years or something? So for like the last 40-odd years, they've sent other crews out to this place, terraformed the planet, i.e. made the air breathable.
Yeah, yeah.
And then put this colony there, and then this young, this mum and dad kind of salvage crew on their little kind of like, whatever, like tank thing they're in, come across the derelict spaceship, the famous horseshoe shaped biomechanical... weird ship from the first film, Alien.
Which is the one of the things that sort of stood out to me straight away. Because I remember from the first film that they said that planet wasn't that big.
No.
They mentioned it was quite a small planet. And I think they said, I can't remember the exact what they said. But I know they said it wasn't very big at all. Like so many kilometres.
Hmm.
And then it took them how many years for somebody to stumble across this spaceship?
Yeah, no, I don't know. It's just, I guess that's just like movie geography, isn't it? Because it had to be within a certain distance of closeness to the colony ship. And you would question if there were like astronauts there setting up all this stuff for people to live in at some point.
What's
while they're making the air better, it would have been found at least before then. But I'm sure there's a million spin-off comics telling stories like that. But I suppose it's just the pacing of the film, because it's already so long. They just need to get the colonists infected and get Ripley to that planet.
Yeah, because it is. Like, once it starts, it doesn't let up.
No. And like you said, yeah, it's a 2 hour, 35-minute film, I think.
Something like that, yeah. Yeah. Something like that. And for, like, the first 30 minutes, is all set up and then fucking run.
Because compare it to the first film, what did you think of the pacing? Do you think you get straight into the meat of the story straight away in this kind of moving along?
Well, it's like a chalk and cheese. I can't compare the films because the first one is a horror film and this one is an action film.
Yeah.
So I can't really put it against the other one because it's just a completely different thing. But it's, like, again, for the first 30 minutes, it's sort of like Ripley's like, nah, I don't want to go. I don't want to go. All right, then I'll go.
What's her reasoning for going? Do they bribe her with, like, you'll get all your kind of, like, qualifications back to be, like, have your job back, essentially?
Yeah, and he sort of says that too, doesn't she? Like, because he keeps reminding
us. She loses her space license or something for destroying company property.
Like, you keep having nightmares, don't you? Oh, you're going to have to face it.
Yeah.
And then I think she finds out that because she's quite a nice person, and when she finds out that there's people that could be in danger, she's like, oh, for fuck's sake.
Mm. It's also funny because in the modern parlance of things, you've got a lot of, I guess, feminist groups complaining that women aren't well represented and there's not any good female characters, and they never seem to remember.
She's the bomb, man.
Yeah, she's like, she kicks ass in this film. And not only that, I mean, she got an Oscar nomination for this film, and that's unheard of for like an action sci-fi film. Like the Oscars consider actors or actresses for things like this. You get like visual effects things like the American Werewolf that we did a couple of episodes back with, you get like a special makeup award for all the technical aspect of it, but for an actual performance, I think this is the only time that a horror or an action sci-fi film has been like nominated for a Best Actress Oscar. She didn't win, of course, but I think that's speaks volumes about her performance and how good she is in the film as this kind of like leader, as to kind of like,
well, she didn't start as a leader, did she? She was sort of in the background.
Well, she's like an advisor, isn't she?
Yeah.
Like, no one takes her seriously. They just think she's this like wittering annoyance on the ship.
Yeah,
and then
who this bitch?
Yeah, she's the one who has the actual leadership cojones to fucking, you know, rally everyone and fucking get them off this planet, basically.
Yeah, because they all bottle it. They're like fucking John Connor bottles-y.
Yeah.
Who's the... I like that, though. I like the... one of the sisters from Shawshank, he was good.
Well, you know what? Because you mentioned both our favourite Lethal Weapon film, Lethal Weapon 2.
Yes, and, he's in the second one. Hello, yeah. Hello, hello.
He's hot, isn't accent. He? And he gets shot on the plastic. Because I was just checking to see if I was still going plastic.
was
please,
dead
sir,
good.
Listen to your friend. You don't want to go to South Africa.
That was dead good. Dude, just have his painting. I can't do it. Because you're black. Yeah.
Because you're black. But you're black.
That's class. Right then. Yeah. But yeah, he's in it, isn't he? Yeah. I liked him.
Hockey, yeah, big ass gun. Jeanette Goldstein's in it. Oh, yeah, because they've got those cool, like, heavy wet, like, rifles, haven't they? These
yeah, I understand
guns.
They look good, but in a world where the further we're going into the, you know, the more time passes,
yeah,
the smaller things get. It's like, well, okay, we'll go so many years into the future and the guns will just get bigger. But again, 80s action film.
Yeah, well, it's only those two. Also, I think if you know about the kind of the technical aspects of these films, like in terms of the story, I mean, apart from that, I mean, they were all working weapons. The weaponsmith that made all these guns, they look so cool. The thing Vasquez and Drake have are smart guns, so they kind of like almost they've got like this sensor on them, so they actually direct themselves to whatever kind of a hostile movement is coming towards the person holding the gun.
That's good shit, though.
Also, the thing they're actually attached to, they've got these harnesses with the gun on, this kind of like hydraulic arm, don't they?
Is that what it is?
Yeah, well, it's actually a real thing. Like many of the things in this film, they're all like adapted real things. But the smart guns harnesses are Steadicam harnesses. It was created so you get this continuous floating shot when you wouldn't need like a dolly track, like a little train track to pull the camera on. Mm. And it was developed, I think, or it was mainly used in Return of the Jedi for the speeder bike chase. So they'd just run through the woods with the camera and it wouldn't get like camera shakes. It was on this like steady arm. So Cameron took that idea and attached like this big gun to it. So that's why it has that...
big ass gun.
That cool look. But yeah, they go off into space. You wake up on this ship with all these like characters, and I think Alien 3 suffers from this. I think when you're populating a film with different characters, they all need a very specific and different personality and look. And I think Aliens in like a team of people.
Yeah,
I think Cameron did like a really, really good job.
The Mad About You bloke, I couldn't sort of take him seriously because the whole film, it must just be his voice, but it sounds like he's doing a really tame Christopher Walken impression.
Like
his voice just does this the whole time. And like when you do it, if you're doing a walking, like people go up and down, like, oh no, he stays all the same, just like this. And he doesn't really go up too high or down too low.
And like
couldn't fucking take him seriously at all.
So, yeah, I mean, what jumped out of you from this film? Not the aliens, but like... They go to the colony, they discover everyone's kind of essentially been killed. Find this lone survivor, this little girl called Newt.
Yes.
Because Ripley has like been told her daughter died, basically waiting for her because she never came, returned to Earth. Her 11-year-old daughter has passed away because she's been gone for like nearly 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
This hole of motherhood in Ripley's life. They find this little girl, they fight some aliens several times. I don't know, on paper, this sounds like a crap film, but I don't know.
I liked the constant reminder of the threat, and there was like, obviously with there being more, there's so much more action in it, but just like, they shoot the aliens, and then you forget the acid blood, and they go, oh, fuck yeah, the acid blood.
Mm.
The amount of aliens they put into it, obviously it's called Aliens, so you expect more than one. I liked the scene where there was like they were backtracking and they were like, okay, we'll seal everything off and they can't get to us.
Yeah, that's a great bit when they're kind of they go, it's in the room because it's
yeah they're coming closer
and
it's like,
that can't be true.
They're 6 meters away. They're not in here. And it's like,
and it suddenly dawns on them that oh fuck, we forgot.
Yeah, they're above us.
They're above the walls in the ceiling.
I thought that was good. That was really good. That bit was just visually as well. It looked really good.
How they did that? They had four actors in like, and I'll tell you what the alien suits made of in a minute. But they had like a bunch. I think it was like seven actors. Sorry, they only had like seven suits for this film. Did you know that?
Yeah, they used mirrors, didn't they?
You see the cryo tubes opening on the ship when the Marines wake up. There's a mirror at the end of that shot, so you've got this. Like another, you've doubled the amount of kind of cryo tubes you've got. But no, they only had like seven like working alien suits, and basically they employed dancers and gymnasts to play the aliens. And Cameron's idea was, you had all this detail, this beautiful detail on the original suited alien,
yeah,
which Guy Giga made. In this, it's basically like like spandex dance skins. So okay. It was like a spandex onesie, and then they would glue on, like, I guess, football pads, just like rubber alien bits. So they'd put like a bit of tubing on the leg with a hot glue gun, and then they'd put a few like bits on the thighs and on the kind of ankles, like shin guards and things, and alien feet, and then gloves and like the kind of chest and back thing with the tubes coming off it, just stuck on like a vest, and then just put this rudimentary rubber head on the actor.
Yeah.
And shot from the distance with low lighting and like that strobing effect. That's how they got the actors to kind of play the aliens. And Cameron thought, if you make the movements more alien-like and concentrate more on how the alien moves and kind of like make it look less human, that will sell it better with the lighting than actually having all these like beautifully produced, well-made suits where they didn't have the budget for, basically.
Get away from her, you bitch!
What else did I like?
The forklift truck.
That was fucking class, that was.
Well, that yeah, was I think one of the strengths of the film is you've got all this like functional, almost like, yeah, I could believe that's real. It looks like a futuristic JCB.
Yeah, I don't think what nobody's done there. That's a great idea.
Well, it's actually in the film, it was just like very made of lightweight plastic, and there was actually a man inside it puppeteering,
behind her,
like, wearing a suit behind her. But yeah, and all the stuff looks like weirdly functional and like almost round the corner.
The thingy, the hub, but not really the hub, where the nest, we'll say. I thought that was really good as well. Like, that bit where they all started sort of coming out of the walls.
Mm.
When they first went in to sort of have a look around, because they're following the heart monitors or something.
Yeah, and they're sensing all that movement around them with the motion trackers, and they can't see anything. Yeah. They just start getting, like, picked off one by one.
Because from then on, the film just sort of goes bang. You can't really sit back now.
The commanding officer kind of like folds, doesn't he, under all the pressure, and then Ripley has to take over. Mm. And she drives in the APC and kind of essentially rescues them all.
Well, the ones that are left.
So what did you think of the actual alien effects? I know, I still think they really hold up, and I think as you will see the later films in this series, you'll see like the drop-off in kind of quality.
Yeah.
Stan Winston did these, of course. He did Jurassic Park, Terminator 1, Terminator 2, I mean, like, you name it.
Lethal Weapon.
Yeah, he did Mel Gibson's mullet for Lethal Weapon 3 when it just got bigger and bigger and went out sideways.
Because you're black. That's fucking class, that is.
But you're black. You don't want to get to South Africa.
Oh, that's tickled me.
So, I don't know, when did you see this film then? Because, like, I mean, you said you saw Alien, then you didn't think much of it, then you gave it a reappraisal, and then you know you think it's a great film on the second viewing. What effect did this film have on you watching it? Because, like, just to let everyone know again, if you join the show in the middle of it, how you do that, I have no idea. But, like, watching films.
Yeah, I'll start this podcast halfway through.
You're watching films from a modern perspective as somebody who's not seen these alleged classic films, and we're here to find out, do they actually hold up? Are they worth it? And do they justify people still buying action figures, which I own a few even now. I bought one 3 weeks ago.
Okay.
Like, there's still merchandise and there's still fandom. There's still people that dress as the Colonial Marines. You can like buy costumes and make your own. And
well, everyone sort of got really excited over the Prometheus and the Covenant. So, you know, there's a massive audience for these films.
Yeah, and again, it's all based literally off Alien and Aliens. So, I mean, mm-hmm. Everyone regards these films, and again, like, not only are they considered like great sci-fi horror films, they're considered like some of the best films of all time. I think I'm pretty sure it's in the BFI top 100 films in like a really low position, both Alien and Aliens. I'm quite sure. I mean, what did you think of it as a virgin viewer or a fresh viewer to this?
For me, I prefer Alien.
That's it. Cut his mic. Stop the show.
Because this was just... I'd like action films a lot because we talk about Lethal Weapon for like fucking... But I don't know. I just, after coming, because I watched them quite close together. Like, I watched the first Alien, and then obviously I watched it again. And then I watched Aliens the same night that I'd rewatched Alien. So I was very fresh off this claustrophobic horror, like horror house set in space sort of, you know, very close film. And then you watch this, and it's just sort of everything's times 10. And there's more people in it, there's more aliens, there's more action, there's more deaths. And maybe it's another one that I'll need to rewatch.
Mm.
Because I think I kind of got a bit
blunt or jaded to it.
Yeah, sort of lost in all of the action. But I still think that it kept some of the same sort of qualities that I liked from the first one. Like the army and the crew were all, again, their sort of banter and how real they were with each other. Their chemistry I thought was really good.
Yeah, I think, again, like Alien, there's like really good defined characters in this, whether they're kind of like negative or like positive to the story in terms of like he's a dick and he's a bad guy. And like they're all like, even then, they're all like good characters.
Yeah.
And I think they all behave in kind of like very, like you said, like realistic ways. Like the commanding officer just flips out and falls under the pressure. Like yeah. Hudson, who's like the big braggart and bully of the group, becomes like... I guess one of the weaker characters, even though he can't, I guess he redeems himself a little bit later on, and all this kind of like idea that technology kind of fails them. They go in with all this amazing equipment and they just get completely fucked. And then they're just like, they're just left to rely on their wits essentially.
But yeah.
Then you kind of get Newt coming into it, like the little girl and stuff.
Which she's like a big, like a massive thing for the film, isn't she really? Like everyone sort of loves her and shit. Because didn't she disappear after this?
In the film or real life?
No, she did this and like became a teacher or something like that.
Yeah, she did. But again, I think this is down to James Cameron. She wasn't an actress and didn't have any intention to be. She just did it on a whim, went to the audition, and they cast her because all the other kids that they think they cast, if you watch the making of, were all kind of very used to auditionings. So they're all kind of very high and like, am I acting now and stuff? And
it wasn't real enough.
It wasn't real enough. So James Cameron picked this girl who hadn't done any acting at all, and then who was like obviously very naturalistic and stuff. And then,
what were you going to say? Somebody you knew worked with him, and it was a bit of a
deal. I think I'm not sure if I mentioned this in the first episode we did about American Werewolf in London. I was lost in the Hollywood Hills about 5 years ago, and this guy came out of his house and went, "What are you doing, buddy?" Like this very direct American, get off my lawn.
Get out of my bin, stop nicking my shit.
Christopher Murphy, sorry, he played one of the Marines who was working with Michael Biehn, who plays Hicks in this film, the only surviving Marine, spoilers. He said, because I recognized him, because I'm a nerd, I went, "Oh my God, I know you. You're in the Abyss, aren't you?" And then I think he kind of warmed up then, and we started talking for about 20 minutes, but...
Just on the street.
Yeah. So I think he was just flat. He got recognized. You know what actors like.
Mm.
But yeah, no, he said working with Cameron on that, the most difficult, apparently one of the most difficult shoots ever in the history of film, because Cameron wanted to shoot everything underwater. And that was obviously difficult. He didn't take any advice from Spielberg shooting stuff on the sea, but it was very difficult. They hated each other. And James Cameron was like, is very kind of taskmaster and knows exactly what he wants. And because he was a special effects man and works in every department pretty much for Roger Corman, he knows everyone's job.
And I think we've all had
managers in jobs that are like that, but usually they're not that good. They just, you know, power corrupts, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But apparently Cameron knows everyone's job and he's actually awesome. That's what they say in the Aliens documentary. So yeah, he's got this reputation being a bit of a prick on set. But this Christopher Murphy just said, as long as you do, you know your job and you're sharp and you're on it, you won't have any problems with him. But if you start like half-assing it, he'll fucking come down on you like a ton of bricks. That was basically what he said.
Yeah, well, he's sort of like a ringleader trying to keep everything together, so you can sort of understand that.
And also, he was under the, like, I think I said this in the early part of this show, is that, like, all the English crew didn't like Cameron because he was coming in and touching some beloved, I guess, what they considered a British film because it was shot there with British crew and British director.
Is he classed as a British film, then?
No, but I think a lot of films in that era were kind of made at Pinewood and Shepperton and stuff, and Alien, because it was a British crew completely pretty much, and because Ridley Scott had directed it, and because it was such considered a classic, everyone was obviously very proud of it. And many of the crew that works on Alien were working on Aliens with this new upstart with no reputation as far as they were concerned. He tried to set up screenings for Terminator many times. None of the crew showed up.
Oh, I've read that. Yeah, like as a way to get him to warm to him.
They never respected him. There's a famous thing in British film, especially then, when everyone would have a tea break. In American film, you have breakfast and then you kind of shoot all the way through. Mm. Whereas in British film at the time, they would not have breakfast and they would have like a tea lady come through with some like cheese rolls and cups of tea. So when she arrived,
standard.
You'd been shooting from like 7 or 8 a.m. You were hungry. So like if you missed food at that point, you wouldn't eat till much, much later. So people just stop shooting all of a sudden and just go and get tea and coffee and sandwiches, and he fucking hated this, and he like was screaming at people and like didn't get on with the crew, so it set up this much of a very much of a tense kind of shoot where the kind of cast and crew were at each other. They would have t-shirts printed up with like shitty comments about Cameron like emblazoned on the front and just would wear them like bold as brass. So I guess the pressure he was under to kind of prove himself at his second feature, plus the crew not liking him and Cameron's, I guess, attitude of like, I'm the best, I can do this.
Yeah.
Fucking listen to me, mister. You've worked in British film for 50 years and you've worked with all the great film directors. I don't give a fuck. You're doing what I'm telling you. I guess didn't make for a fun shoot. But obviously he's proven himself, and James Cameron is apparently still a douchebag on set, but I don't know, the films still speak for themselves.
I think you can't be though, when you know what I mean, you fucking, I'm James Cameron, who am you?
I'm James Cameron, y'all. I'm Mary Poppins, y'all. So you weren't that moved by Aliens, or were you? So I mean,
I still really enjoyed it.
Because you said it's a 2.5 hour film, but you said you didn't feel that time, did you?
No, definitely not, because it was so busy and there was so much. Like, there wasn't really a time to. They never really sat back and reflected on what was happening. Mm. There was maybe a little bit of time where she went to bed, but then she woke up and there was one of them in the room.
Yeah, like I think facehugger scene in the med lab is really good. Yeah, when you don't know where it's going to come from.
But I think that's because it slows down and then just goes, right, well, we're starting again now.
Yeah.
It's like it doesn't really let you relax, which the first one didn't really, but...
I think one of the best scenes is actually the sentry gun scene where you don't see any aliens. You just see these counters going down to zero.
Yeah, that was
like,
really good,
fuck.
That was. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think because it hit me as well at like this perfect time at 11 and being impressionable. I prefer Aliens, but I think Aliens still an amazing film. And I get why people either like... I think they'd love both, but they think one or the other's kind of better.
It's got louder characters, this one. Obviously, you got Bill. Is it Bill Paxton?
Yeah, as Hudson.
Yeah, but I liked Bishop. I thought Bishop was really good.
Well, he's good, yes, because it's you're not sure which way he's going to go, because it sets up that she doesn't trust androids for obvious reasons, because of Aliens.
She's a proper knob to him for no reason. Like, obviously, there's a reason, but... Mate, it's been like 50 years. They've improved this technology. Chillaby.
And then they send him down that tube and he's going, I'd prefer not to do it. I might be synthetic, but I'm not stupid.
Yeah. I liked him a lot. I thought he was really good. I think he's got a really good face as well. Like a really interesting face.
Lance Henriksen's like great. He's in many of James Cameron's early films. And I think, he had a massive career off the back of this film playing Bishop. But yeah, I think he's like the surprise character in those terms, because like everyone kind of shits at him, and like he's the one that actually kind of saves the day, doesn't he?
Yeah, because you think he's disappeared and she's all pissed off that he's done.
Yeah,
one.
At the end, and they're about to die, and then he comes back at the last second and rescues them.
Yeah, and then at the end again, he gets like ripped apart, and then he still saves. I think he still
Newt,
saves
doesn't
Newt,
he?
Doesn't
he?
Because
he hangs onto the floor.
Yeah, that was good. I thought I like the Queen as well. I think the Queen looked really good.
Well, Giga didn't design that.
No, because she didn't have a dick, so...
Exactly. Yeah, no, James Cameron kind of... again, this fucking bastard, he's good at everything. He designed the APC. He designed or worked with Ron Cobb. Ron Cobb did a lot of the designs for Alien, but not the Giga stuff. He did all the kind of like mechanical stuff like the airlocks and things. Ron Cobb worked on this, and Cameron designed like the weaponry and the guns and the smart gun. And then at the end of all that, he designed the Queen. And the basic design he initially did was the one that kind of ended up in the film, even down to the kind of weird high heel feet, because she's a chick.
Of course, yeah.
But yeah, no, I think that scene as well, when she kind of wanders backwards into kind of the egg chamber, and there's that like awful insect bum thing shitting out eggs.
I fucking loved, one of my favourite bits of the whole film was when she goes up the lift. I thought that was class. Like, the lift opens and you see her like look at the lift. And she, like, you watch her work out.
That, oh, yeah.
I could go up that lift.
They
yeah.
did that. I got that
lift. Yeah. I thought that really made me laugh. That sort of took me out of the film for a good 5 minutes, because I was just imagining her stumbling into the lift and then just waiting, and the lift music. Dee-doo. And she's just waiting for the lift to go up. That really, really made me laugh.
Hey, maybe you haven't been keeping up on current events, but we just got our asses kicked, pal.
What did you think of the actual aliens compared to Alien? Because, I mean, again, they did lots of close-ups of the mouth and stuff. You didn't really see them, like, in a clear way. And I think they did shoot them with, like, lots of strobes and smoke again.
Yeah, it was quick. Yeah, it cut away really fast. Like, again, when They were above them, and there was like five or six of how many ever there were.
Ducts thing is good, I think.
Yeah, like that one was chasing them. I thought that was good. Because when you did see them, they weren't, like, they were doing unusual things, and like it was quick enough for you to like sort of take in what it was.
Yeah.
And then cut away before you sort of could pick it apart. I thought that was quite good.
Yeah, that was, like I said, Cameron trying to, what is that quote? It's just like, you need very few pixels of information to spot a human form or like a human movement. So he wanted to put more impression on the way the aliens were lit and the way they moved. Because there's a great scene, I think, when she's shooting up the eggs and you see this alien like leap from wall to wall just at the camera.
Yeah.
And it's obviously someone in a suit and just how it looks so fucking cool, but it's just like, it's just a guy on a wire and a wire work team, and he's just leaping from one wall to the next, but he does like four jumps down this like, that like alien walling, if you will, the nest. It just looked really cool.
Yeah. I thought the nest looked really good as well.
Well, good. Glad you liked it.
It did.
So, would you change anything?
More Sigourney Weaver bum.
Yeah?
Nah. I'd probably knock 10 minutes off here.
Yeah? Well, I mean, as I said, you saw the director's cut, so in the actual regular theatrical cut, you didn't know that her daughter died, so there was none of that stuff where...
Oh, really? But I think that improved the relationship with her and Newt.
You don't see Newt's family finding the derelict ship and the dad getting the face hugger on him, so you don't have any of her family, like, scene.
Oh, really? I thought that was quite good, though. I like that it sort of showed the family finding it, and then it stayed with the kids, and then, like, oh, dad's fucked. But it didn't show them discovering the eggs, because you don't need to see that.
Yeah, what was I going to say? The sentry gun scene wasn't in it either, if I remember correctly. So those three main scenes, that adds up to, I think, about 5 or 10 minutes, and I think there was a couple of other things that escaped me now. But yeah, I think if maybe you would have enjoyed the theatrical version.
Maybe I'll watch the theatrical version next time.
Yeah.
I will watch it again.
Now you've seen those scenes now, I think you'll miss them, because I really do think they add to the story, like her discovering that she had a daughter and she never came home and she'd been gone, and a daughter like obviously lived and died not knowing what happened to her mother in deep space and stuff. So that really adds like the layer that you need, along with the Newt stuff that they have to find each other.
Yeah, because she sort of latches to her, doesn't she?
And yeah,
she's
it's like redemption for them both. And then you've got obviously that kind of like that theme of motherhood. Cause I think Alien's theme is kind of like psychosexual rape stuff, and this is all about kind of motherhood and protection.
Well, yeah, because even the Queen's protecting her.
Exactly. Yeah. She's like, call off your dogs, I'm leaving.
She did call her mommy at one point now, and I was like, that's a bit too.
Oh, Hollywood, what have you done? Oh,
don't do that. She's not your mother. Your mother's dead.
She should have stopped the film and gone, Newt, look, your parents are dead.
Yeah, don't assume, dickhead.
They were killed by aliens. I'm not your mother. Sorry. So in short, you'd shave 10 minutes off it, take out the mommy bit, and you thought aliens were shit compared to aliens.
I think it was shit. Thanks for listening. Preferred Alien. But
well, give it a second reappraisal and watch the theatrical cut, and then see what you think. And then we'll have a little button on the next one when we do Alien 3. We'll do 5 minutes of what you a 2 minute recap of like, well, I saw the other version of Aliens.
Yeah,
and it didn't shape me.
But apparently it gets worse from here. So
I think things are going to get interesting now. We go on to Alien 3 and Resurrection because now. Because these are the ones that literally divide people, that people like will like go, it's shit, it's terrible. Alien 3's Marmite, people either hate it or they think it's really good. Was it David Fincher who directed 3 kind of just had a really bad time? They kept messing him around to the point he wanted his name taken off it.
Oh, okay.
So when the Alien quadrilogy rolled around and the directors were given opportunities to either tweak their films and release an alternative version, he just wouldn't reply to them and wants nothing to do with it. So they've put together all his existing footage.
Oh, but it doesn't
flow. Into a thing called the... And now it does. It's called the Assembly Cut. It's 20 minutes longer. It's 2 hours, 20 minutes.
Right.
And it just makes the film a lot better and works, even though it's not his cut. It's all the stuff he shot and what was kind of intended for the film.
So which one should I watch?
I don't know. I'd say maybe just the regular Alien 3, but I think you'd enjoy the Assembly.
No, I've been going with the director's cut, haven't I? So I think I might as well go for the longer version, I think.
So, yeah, but that's got Charles Dance.
Charles Dance.
Yeah. It's got just one alien in, so a lot of people thought that was a backstep for having this gigantic war, but I don't know where you could go to beat James
Cameron. It was like a full-on war, was it?
Yeah. Well, that's the tagline of the film, This Time It's War.
Is it really? Is that where that comes from?
Yeah. Yeah.
I did enjoy it. I really, really enjoyed it, but I think it's just because I came straight off watching Alien.
Yeah, you were set up for this kind of like, oh, we're going to get another
it's
Alien.
It's going to be scary. Different kind of concept. It's just fucking bang, 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 bang. And so, okay, that's fair enough. I like
I don't know. I still find Aliens really scary. But those like key scenes, like the facehugger scene, where like Cameron, again, took something innocuous that you didn't really see in the first
elaborated
stuck in someone's
bit,
face, and then it was dead, and then he actually made it into this like
horrible spider
character
thing.
And this threat that you kind of like, if you're stuck in a room with it, you're fucked basically. And it took like three people to like pull it off.
Bad shit always happens in a soundproof room as well.
Exactly. And then Burke turns off the camera, so you know he's up to no good. So all this intrigue starts happening.
I'm glad he died.
There's actually a deleted scene on YouTube where Ripley, on the way to Newt, just as she finds her kind of like personal locator, that little watch with the
on the floor,
thing on it, she finds Burke like fused into the walls, and he's like, "I can feel it inside me; it's coming." And she gives him a grenade to finish himself off. Not in a masturbatory way, actually. Set up a grenade and kill himself.
Finish yourself off, mate.
Put that in your bum. Make your orgasm stronger.
Mira, who's Snow White?
She's supposed to be some kind of consultant. Apparently, she saw an alien once.
Whoopie fucking do.
So there we go. You saw for the first time 1986's Aliens, and does it still hold up then as a piece of entertainment for any new viewers who have not seen Aliens, even though we've probably ruined it if you're listening to this show?
Yeah, I would say it was very worth it.
Oh, cool. That's good.
Mm-hmm. You are 3 for 3.
3 for 3. See, this is where the ground's going to come out from under me now. We're going to find out, was it worth it?
Yeah.
Was Alien 3 worth it, listeners? You can find out in the next episode of Was It Worth It?
Yeah, boy. Ethan, drop your social media stuff and things and other things of that nature.
All right. I'm Ethan McKinley. My Twitter handle is Ethan McKinley UK. I've got a podcast called Questionable, where I talk to various famous
characters,
famous celebrities and characters from around
all
the world.
All interesting episodes as well.
And I also do movie breakdowns and trailer reviews and film reviews also on the same channel.
Yeah, boy. You can find Master Debaters on Twitter @_MasterDebaters, because I do another show with two of my mates and it's all right.
It's more saucy than this one.
Yeah, well,
you tackle issues.
Yeah. Find us on iTunes or on the Radio Misfits Network. Thank you very much again, Ethan.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure as always. I like doing these things. It's so fascinating having, like I said, a modern perspective, or somebody who's jaded and obviously like an adult who's seen it and seen many films to compare it to.
A miserable old bastard.
These films are still holding up, which is good. 3 for 3,
so far,
American Werewolf.
So far, yeah.
Alien and Aliens, they're all worth it,
they
folks.
Are.
Check out the previous episodes. And next time, we're going to do the real kind of like the Russian roulette episode, where we're going to find out if Alien 3 was worth it. I know what you're all screaming into your earphones right now that it's not, but we're going to see what Toffer thinks of it.
Yeah. So, yeah, be excellent to each other.
All right, folks, we'll see you at the movies, and we'll be back with Alien 3
soon.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah, boy. We'll be right back.